All right, here we go. A B-Flow edition of the Ken and Curtis program. That's Boston and Florida tied in together. Good morning, Curtis.
Hey, Ken. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How is, you want to give the weather forecast right off the hop?
So I hate to do this. I'd love to, you know, rub your face in it, but yesterday was gross.
Oh, really?
Rained most of the day. Right now, breezy, overcast, but we're supposed to get to 80, and then tomorrow in the mid-80s with some sun. So
right. No
complaints, but it hasn't been great to this point. The James is absolutely attacking my entire family with a hose right now, and I am safely ensconced in the neighbor's art studio, so I'm loving life.
Well, James must be fired up after our Fenway Fest broadcast for Sox fever. I mean, he probably wants to go to the west coast of Florida.
I felt so sad that he fell asleep because he had this perfect Ortiz jersey. It would have been awesome. I would have interrupted Bradford's family reunion with photos with David Ortiz, and it would have been awesome. But despite that, we are happily here, and I love this weekend. I hate that the Chiefs are in the worst game because I'd love to get in a lather about how the Chiefs will lose today, but I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I just am the game tonight with everybody losing their mind about Brady and the conflict of interest, and then tomorrow night the best game of the weekend with the Ravens and the Bills. So,
yeah, Sunday much better day. And 5 years ago, Tom was still around, and Mike Vrabel was on the other sideline. We didn't quite know. You and I kind of knew where things were headed. Some people doubted us, but we kind of knew it was going to go in a bad trajectory. A couple years later, Mac Jones did take your Patriots to the postseason. You and I bought into that erroneously,
Yep. Thought
they would beat the Bills, but. Before we get into the Vrabel stuff and the current Patriots week that was, 5 years post-Brady, Mahomes going for the three-peat. I wouldn't say a lot of chatter about Brady, about Mahomes being the GOAT, but some, you know, his teammates will say he's the greatest of all time. I saw Kelsey on SportsCenter say that this morning to Boomer. But, you know, if he wins a third, then the chatter will kick up again. I guess from a Pats fan, third straight and fourth overall. What is the best scenario here to come from the weekend for the Patriots fan?
So, I mean, obviously the best would be that the Texans pull off the biggest upset since the Jets went into Foxborough in 2011 and 2010, whatever that was, and, you know, can't wait and beat them with Bart Scott. If they have that same with D'Amico Ryans and this Texans team, I just don't see it. Best case of things that could potentially actually happen would be the, for me, the Bills win tomorrow, they blow doors, they take care of the Ravens, they're healthy, and the Chiefs have a couple of, you know, dinged up guys. You know, of all the storylines I saw in preparing for this morning, the one that remains the most enraging and inexplicable is one that you and I agree on, the starting left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs in the divisional round of the playoffs, Joe Tooney. And how this...
I knew there'd be a Bill grievance to start here somewhere.
But there is no... You franchised him on a team that sucked.
Well, Bill knew he was good.
And then you let him walk, and he's, you know, been the best offensive lineman for the Chiefs three straight Super Bowl championships. And he's their left tackle protecting the guy who's in pursuit of Tom. Like, it's so maddening. It defies logic that guy was able to leave here.
He's only 32. He's like still in his prime. I mean, he might play another 10 years, Joe Tooney.
And the other thing, just to sort of go back 5 years if we could, because Shaughnessy had a good column yesterday on the new world of no playoffs, where for my adult life, the playoffs, the season started today, and it was usually like, can Tebow keep it close? Can the Texans keep it close? Can the Chiefs keep it close? But it was always about, who are you playing next week? Are you traveling to Pittsburgh? Are you hosting the Steelers? Are you going to Indy? Whatever. And 5 years ago, we did a broadcast from, I think it was Twin River in Rhode Island, where they had just opened a sports book, and it was Patriots-Chargers. And I bet the Patriots, and it was this, you know, this feeling of the end, that this was just the last, you know, it just felt the finality of the Patriots' run felt like it was there. It was a year removed of the disaster in Super Bowl 52. And that bonus run here really was, you know, one of the more enjoyable ones. And, you know, it precluded Mahomes from getting another. But
You mean the year Bills defense won a Super Bowl?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep, Super Bowl 53 after right. they put up 34. I think the Chiefs scored 30 points in the second half of that AFC title game. So
I think Tom scored 13 in the Super Bowl, if I recall.
He sure did, and you don't get to the Super Bowl if he doesn't have one of the best. The final 5 minutes of that game, that may be one of the five best football games I've ever watched.
You're talking about the AFC title game, yeah.
I mean, the Super Bowl sucked in terms of aesthetically pleasing, but, of course, they got the win. Nonetheless, that 5 years ago feels like a generation. Like, the Patriots now, I watch these games, and I love, you know, the NFL's great, and we all watch it, but it used to feel like, oh, okay, the Patriots are out, but they're going to get this team next year. I can't wait to see them take on this team. They have so removed themselves from any sort of conversation surrounding the AFC or even their own division that it's like I watch these games almost as like a neutral observer.
Well, a neutral observer with the Chiefs?
No, like I don't have
invested. Just in general,
I'm just not as invested. I got it. I mean, I'm going to root against the Chiefs. That's just sort of what we do. But like tomorrow night, you know, I used to hate the Ravens. God, did I hate the Ravens? Suggs and Ray Lewis and all their fans and John Harbaugh, the dink. Like I hated that team. Now it's just like I'm rooting for the Bills. But to me, the biggest storyline entering this weekend is not that Tom Brady has got some, you know, he's going to be supportive of the offensive coordinator. Like the dumbest manufactured storyline I've ever heard. But the real one is that Bill Belichick hasn't signed his contract and he's waiting to see if Sirianni gags, and I'm praying that happens.
Well, not only Sirianni. You said you expect the Bills to win or you're rooting for them to win. I think if they lose at home, Belichick to Buffalo becomes a story.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I don't know if you're a Pats fan, if that's a good or a bad thing. Maybe you think he's cooked and washed up and he'll, you know, put that franchise in disarray. But that would be something. Coming back to the division, I mean, I guess the Jets job is still open, but we know that's gone. He already looked into that one. But you're right. The fact that he hasn't signed the contract and you got Lombardi lying his ass off, slippery Mike Lombardi, and there are six jobs still open and more to come. It's just, it's bizarre. And I mean, even if Bill coaches this year at North Carolina, I've totally changed my mind. That is not going to work. That is going to crumble. He's like half in, half out. He's just waiting for the best job to come open. And we got to get Calvin Brodus back on. Our Cowboys job is sitting there waiting.
And the other is just, anybody that said with a straight face, any of them work in the morning at WEEI, that Bill was thrilled to be in college and that it would be more impressive. Wiggy, happy 50th birthday, Jermaine Wiggins.
Happy birthday, Wiggs.
Half century. I hope you live 100 more years. You are the man. However, you are wrong about some things. And when you were talking about, when Wiggy was talking about how this is almost more impressive, he can create this NFL, whatever, clearinghouse of players and all this stuff. Bill would coach the Saints. He would coach the worst NFL. Outside of the Jets, well, not even the Jets. He tried to get to the Jets. There's no NFL job he would turn down. He is desperate to get back. Why else wouldn't you sign this, and why else wouldn't you build out your staff?
Right.
I mean, obviously it's what's going on, and I love it. He shouldn't be in college. We agree on that.
Yep. I mean, I guess he'd rather coach there than nowhere. We've established that, and that may be a good decision, actually. He's definitely done a good job of keeping himself at the top of the list of attention for NFL cycles. He's made himself sort of appealing again, and he's doing a good job, I guess, in the moment, but they got to be terrified if you're one of the Carolina brass down there that he's out the door within the week. And I agree, there could be another couple jobs coming open this weekend if there are some upsets.
I mean, people who say, you know, Bill's doing this, he signed a contract. The guy didn't sign a contract, and he signed a cocktail napkin. Like, I mean, let's not act like this guy. I mean, great coach, all of that, but he's loyal to himself, as he should be.
Yeah.
He's not loyal to North Carolina.
Well, he's going to leave his kid there.
Well, the other thing is, like, the reason I love working with Courtney is because she's great at everything, but she also represents, like, the American public. So, like, when Bill puts out a picture of he and Jordan, she's like, they wouldn't be putting this picture out. I'm like, that's the only reason they put the picture out. Like, that's why they did it, because John Q. Public is like, oh, he loves it here. Look at his girlfriend.
I do love how Bill upsets you, even when he's far away and doesn't have an NFL job. He has still got you slightly deranged.
You know what? It upsets me that people think that he would stay at North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't think he would stay at North Carolina?
No.
And if he wanted to be there, he would have signed the effing contract.
He would have. And it's very strange, and it makes this weekend actually more interesting to me, gets me more invested, because of the potential for something to come down Monday or Tuesday next week, depending on what happens.
I watch these Eagles. I mean, because I didn't get as many this year, but I watched the Eagles last week against the Packers, because that was one of the few games I was looking forward to on the wild card weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagles are so talented. Like, Nick Sirianni seems like a nice enough guy. Like, I don't know anything about him. He seems kind of like a tool, but whatever. You could put James as the head coach of that team, and they'd be where they are. Now is where the actual talent as a head coach comes into play.
Yeah, and coaching with Sean McVay.
And McVay, the way McVay ended that Rams game was such a fireable offense. When Tom, brilliantly in that game, is pointing out, so you QB sneak it, and you call timeout. When you're down two scores and you need to get the ball back. In that one series of plays, he cost them the number one seed in a bye. Just because you literally could have gone up to the line of scrimmage on second down, spiked it, and you have a chance to win. Like, all you needed was the timeouts, and he butchered it. Like, that could easily happen tomorrow, and McDermott's out of a job.
Yeah. I like Rams plus the points. I don't know if you're going to bet much this weekend in the NFL. I do think that's worth a look. And I don't know about college, because I've been horrible. You've been good up until last week.
Brutal.
But Notre Dame plus 8.5, man, that seems pretty enticing.
Yeah, I've doubted. Ohio State, you know what? It's interesting. Like, the way Ohio State has played this playoff really puts a light to how tightly clenched their buttocks was against Michigan. Like, Michigan's not a good team, not great at all, and they lost at home in a game that defined their season. And since then, they've blown out the Oregon Ducks and Texas and Tennessee. And now they sit here. I'm in an odd spot where I really like Marcus Freeman, not because of just he just seems like a guy that's paid his dues.
You're becoming an Irish fan. You're an Irish fan. You're a Bills fan.
I think I might be rooting for Marcus Freeman.
Wow.
And I'm rooting for the Bills. That's right. I'll never root for the Ravens or Chiefs. Last AFC Championship, I was like rooting for a hurricane. Like, I had no interest in that.
And back to that game you referenced, the AFC title game. It is so huge because in these GOAT debates, Mahomes 15-3 or whatever he is in the playoffs, 0-2 against Brady. That is tough. That's always going to be a carrot in your guy's cap, you know.
And it was not that he was winning in the prime of his career. It was that Tom beat him in his second year as a pro, first year as a starter. And then when Tom was 45, he beat him in a Super Bowl. And what also is just sort of, I don't know, like just oddly not discussed, as someone who paid way too much attention to everything written and said about Tom Brady during his career, when the Patriots were winning and Tom was struggling, the biggest story was always, is Tom done? Yet, when the Chiefs struggle and yet still win, when Mahomes struggles yet the Chiefs still win, it's never a talking point. Like, this is now consecutive years in the middle of his prime. In the last 50 games of Patrick Mahomes' NFL career, I'm sorry, last 57, he has a passer rating of 96, 114 TDs, 41 interceptions. Tom's years in Tampa, 43, 44, and 45, a passer rating of 108, 123 touchdowns, 38 interceptions. So at the end of his career, mirroring the prime of Mahomes, Brady outplayed him. And is 2-0 against him in the playoffs. And I think Mahomes is
more talented than
Tom.
Yeah, well, he's 29. He's right. Visually so impressive every time in the clutch, third downs, whatever it takes. He's 15-2 despite those numbers. He just wins every week.
He wins every week, and the Chiefs are just – I talked to Costos yesterday. I mean, that's what they are now. They are the Patriots, where the regular season is, you know, let's try and get a bye if we can, but let's worry about – there's going to be plays later today that we haven't seen all year. They have a brilliant team. Mahomes is – you know, it's not bad to say he's the second-best quarterback of all time. There's been a lot of quarterbacks, but it'll be a – it's just fascinating the way the media covers the Chiefs. It's just a very interesting dynamic as opposed to how they covered the Patriots' run.
All right, well, that's a bit of a table set for the weekend. As a Pats fan, what do you want this weekend? What are you rooting for? Are you invested? Are you feeling passionate about the NFL playoffs? 617-779-7937. As we sit here 5 years post-Brady, year two, Drake May, year one, Mike Vrabel. I do want your now that you had a week to kind of sit on it, Curtis, your first impressions of Vrabel. You got to sit next to him Tuesday down at Gillette. He is the man, according to Adam Schefter, but there have been some interesting developments in the front office around him. We'll discuss those as we continue on Ken and Curtis up until noon today, followed by Shime and Mego. Join us, and right now we head to training with Jacob. Mike Vrabel, introductory press conference. A little bit of our friend Butch Stearns in there, Curtis. But he did talk about Bill, not a lot, didn't dominate it. Of course, very different from last year when it was the complete 180 Mayo press conference. And you also had Vrabel by himself there. And you had, you know, a little bit of, I guess, collaboration because he kept forcing the Elliott Wolf references. But as the week has gone on, you get a lot of reporting that Vrabel's got the power. He's got control. This is a dictatorship again. Back to the Bill days. I guess just first question, when you were down there Tuesday with Vrabel, and you guys got to chat with him, it went, you know, I think it went well. It was very comfortable. Did you get a vibe one way or the other that he's in command? Like, it's very hard to tell that, I guess, just sitting there interviewing a guy. But
so I would say the big difference with Vrabel and with Mayo and with Bill Belichick is, unlike Bill and Gerard, Vrabel is really comfortable in who he is. I think there is an element of just angst. Bill, when he would sit down in the room, and oftentimes we'd have 3 to 4 minutes, it would just be really awkward, tense. And even though, you know, Wiggy played for him, Greg kissed his ass.
Greg is the vibe curator. You would think he would be able to curate that vibe out of anywhere, around anyone.
Greg would know a specific person that was close with Bill that Greg knew personally, and Greg is the best networker of anybody I've ever met. And he would just say, hey, I knew so-and-so, and he'd be like, oh. And then he'd just start reading his game book.
Sounds like back to our meetings with Upstairs Joe when he was the head honcho around here.
Oh, my awkward. God. Those were awkward. Who could forget the two Joes? New dads, Arbano. Congrats.
Congrats,
but,
Joe.
The other one with Gerard was, it was almost, his presence was that there wasn't one, that he was just part of the crew. You know, he would give Wiggy a hard time about something. It was often, you know, what Wiggy's diet was or Greg, or it was light, but it was often Gerard looking out, you know, with the Patriots media and other stuff. It was just, it didn't have the same gravitas. It was always, and as the season wore on, it got more and more awkward because all of us like Gerard Mayo. It's impossible not to like the guy. He's genuinely nice. He's, you know, decent human being, like everything, that's nothing wrong with him.
Yep.
There would just be this, you know, these tough questions that had to be asked because the team's performance was so bad and because what he was saying kept shifting. And the reason Mayo failed, above all else, was that he tried to use his identity as what he wasn't. And if you build yourself on not being something, you yourself are nothing.
Well, beyond that, it started from your first interview with Mayo. You asked him about the payroll, salary flexibility. Right. He said burn some cash. That was his personality. It's not like he was trying to lie, but then the front office said, no, you aren't. So right away, he was rebuffed, you know, rejected from his plans. He probably thought legitimately they were going to go out and spend big dollars, and he was prevented from doing so.
There's been some revisionist history on that where people say immediately after he said that, the Patriots corrected it. That's not true. That was out there for a while.
Yeah, but it was pretty much a week later, wasn't it?
It was a while. It was not a week later. I promise you, Jacob, if you can look into it. I mean, it was, from my recollection, he said that after he was hired, which was around this time. And not until
The first walk back didn't happen? When was the first walk back?
Right, the walk back was delayed because it was like the Red Sox in full throttle. So, what I experienced, to go back to your original question, Vrabel is everything you need. I don't know if it'll work.
By the way, quick Google search, yes, late February, early March. Patriots coach Gerard Mayo backpedals on burn some cash.
And when did he make the initial comments?
I would have been like, you know, basically the same time last year, a year ago, early January, mid-January.
Yeah. So January 22nd was when he said it, over a month later.
Okay. Good point.
So that was totally false that they corrected it. They never did because they wanted it out there. And guess what that also matches? Bill Belichick was expected to get a job. He didn't. So $30 million was taken. If you ever want to understand the correlation between what you spend and what you don't, my guess is Gerard Mayo wasn't lying. I don't think the organization was intentionally misleading the public. They thought they were going to burn some cash, and then when Bill Belichick didn't get a job, they had to pay him $30 million, which got taken out of the funds that they would use on players. Doesn't that stand to reason?
I guess. I mean, they were in on the receiver, Ridley, and didn't
right,
get the job
done. Right, but his non-existent stepbrother didn't like Boston. So
Maybe Elliott Wolf was just in over his head. I mean, is that possible? He was another first-year guy on the job and signs Chukwuekwuegh for, and he signed a couple players, but it was like Chaim Bloom trying to get a deal done. It just wasn't happening.
Right, but the fact that the deals didn't get done were more ownership-related than the GM not, you know, offering the right, you know, Avis rental car. Like, I think what we have with Vrabel today is, if it works, the best possible combination of what was here in the early 2000s to what the player today needs from a coach, which is the guy that is, you're never going to question Vrabel's confidence. He's from, you know, he's not going to be up there. I listened back to, there's a YouTube of the best moments with Edelman's podcast, Games with Names, when people talked about Vrabel. And it was hilarious. There's all these different stories from Pioli to Billy O to Matt Light. And Matt Light just said that he's like, listen, speaking of himself, Matt Light said, I'm as good as anybody at, you know, firing back. Like, I consider myself a decent S-talker. He's like, there's a whole wing of the Hall of Fame for Vrabel. Like, there will never be anybody that can approach him when it comes to a battle of wits. And so when he stands before a locker room, he knows he possesses the ways in which to lead the team. And it failed in Tennessee because he views that he didn't get the right support from ownership.
Well, that's what I think is interesting, because so obviously they hire Ryan Cowden, which we discussed last week. He brings his guy in. But he also, at the same time, at least agreed with Kraft, or, you know, I'm sure Kraft said, you got to pump up Elliott, right? Is there any doubt? Before the press conference, you got to mention Elliott. He's sticking around. We want you to collaborate with this guy. And at least he's walking the company line. And then Robin Glazer resigns, so that's probably more of a Vrabel getting more of his way. But I think he's the guy. I think he's going to be the final say. But yet there's still some of that Kraft involvement going on.
Yeah, and the Kraft involvement will always exist. I mean, to expect any ownership group, the notion that the Krafts didn't have involvement towards the end with Bill is also dishonest. Like, they have, and they should have. It's their team. Like, the notion that they would not have any input is so absurd. And so, while they didn't have maybe the power to say, Bill Belichick, you must sign this player and start that player, there was failures on the field, which led them to decide that they needed to see what was going on, and that's why Bill and the Krafts ended up getting divorced.
Clip of the week, I think, is still the Bruschi from last week.
Oh,
do you have that, Jacob, where he's taking the shot at the front office, or was Teddy Bruschi on ESPN?
Firing Gerard after 1 year, it's been bad for the last 2 years with the New England Patriots organization. When they hired Gerard at the press conference, a big word that was used was collaboration. All right, a collaboration and everybody's input and all of this stuff. Well, I don't know how much it is that anymore, and I think that's a good thing, because Vrabel isn't going to joke around. Vrabel's going to tighten the screws. In my opinion, there are some people in the front office that need to be told, you don't know what you're doing, and you need to take a step back. Someone's coming into that organization now that has conviction, that will let you collaborate. He'll work with people. Yeah, sure, he'll work with you. But I'm telling you, this guy's smarter than you are.
Like, that is something. Tighten the screws and basically know your role, you know?
And I've been told by people that have a better understanding of it than me that was directed at the son of Robert.
Oh, really? Not Robin Glazer?
I think that was sort of a, I don't know this, it wasn't my information, it was just shared with me that was who they believe the target was shot at. And I understand there being issues with that. You know, Jonathan Kraft, you know, and Mike Vrabel or Bill Belichick sitting in a room, I can understand Mike and Bill being like, what are we doing here? But the way that this week sat with me was, and I even talked to, a guy that works in the Patriots this week, and I said to him, it feels like the adults are back at the table. It feels like it's heading in the right direction. I don't know how long it'll take, but for the first time in a while, I'm confident that you're heading in a direction that will be where you want to get back to. And it's how I feel. I don't know. Drake May's great. You know, we all know about his talent. The offensive line has been, outside of Elliott Wolf, the only thing Vrabel's talked about really has been the need to fix the offensive line over and over and over again.
Yeah, he's setting the bar low. He's just like, you know, that whole comment about not losing to dumb teams or whatever it was. He knows this is the greatest project he's ever inherited.
Yes, this is the worst roster in the NFL. And it's not Jerod Mayo's fault. It's not Jonathan Kraft's fault. It's not Robin Glazer's fault. It's not Bill Belichick's fault. It's everybody had a hand in this debacle. And the tweet that I go back to over and over again is the players drafted and developed from the organizations in the NFL making the Pro Bowl for the team that drafted them. The Patriots are 32nd out of 32 teams over the last decade. So you've been failing at the draft, which is the reason you are here, and you've had an owner that doesn't view free agency as the right way to build a team, so you end up with bad drafts and the worst roster in the NFL.
617-779-7937. Jake in Boston kicks us off this morning on Ken and Curtis. What's going on, Jake?
What's up, boys? Let's talk about Robin Glazer, but real quick. If you aren't rooting for Chiefs Lions, I don't know what to tell you. Taylor Swift versus Eminem, Destiny versus Dynasty. Each Chiefs win humiliates the Crafts a bit further. But looking at the Robin Glazer regrams on Instagram over the last 24 hours, I think we've learned a lot more about who she is and what she's done more than anyone else in the beat reporting world has told you about her tenure. And it's disgraceful that someone so unqualified could have that level of power in football operations. Her and Jerod were the equivalent of dumb and dumber. Robin was someone, and this is based off of these regrams and who they were coming from.
Just one second, Jake. I'm not going to stop you entirely. What is a regram? I don't know what that is.
It's like posting when someone tags you on Instagram stories and you bring it into your Instagram story. So it's like a retweet, but it's on Instagram.
Got it.
So anyways, Robin, for these regrams, Robin was brought in, obviously, decently politically, good on the relationship side. So she's brought in to coddle and soften up the right people, which is why she had the Kraft's arm, why the Kraft kind of had her as a spy on Bill towards the end of his career. He also, you know, part politician, part, you know, athlete coddler. Everyone in her regrams was a marketing guy for a Patriot player. Meaning not directly working for the Patriots, but working for agencies like Athletes First or working for their marketing arms. So when the team handed out this garbage money last year, all going to guys that were on the team already, it was because she had an overly emotional connection to that player and their people. And so you're handing out contracts last year to garbage based on PR appearances and Robin's ability to basically market their charity du jour or whatever CBS is like little NFL cares thing in the middle. That's what she was, which leads me to believe over the last 5 years, Curtis, and to your point, you're going back and doing a five-year retrospective. She had some comments about Butker earlier this year on Instagram, like he was a bad guy. We couldn't have him on our team. Antonio Brown, that to me is the beginning of the end. Because Robin and Jonathan made that move. They got Robert on board. That's why Tom Brady was unhappy at an 8-0 quarterback. And on Edelman, on that same podcast that you just quoted with Edelman and Gronk, they said if Antonio Brown was on that team throughout the season, they run the table and they win the Super Bowl, no questions asked. And you probably have a happier quarterback who re-signs here at the end of that season because Robert wouldn't let him walk out the door. So Robin Glazer
question,
was...
Jake, quickly, you, Jake. Just a quick interjection here. So why was Glazer introduced in the first place? Like, how did she assume this power and who did she... you know, buddy up with that thought she was doing the right thing?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I dropped Jake, so sorry
about
that.
I don't understand. I mean, listen, I don't know. I don't know the regrams. I haven't been through it. All I can
you just
say
got on TikTok,
that,
and now you're robbed of that.
Oh, my God. It's the worst day of my life. I can't wait to just not hand...
Their influencer status is highly in question now.
The clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking, buddy.
I don't know if we can verify any of that or all of it. All I would say is it happens to some dynastic organizations where winning becomes not enough. You have to do it a certain way. Like, and that's always when it falls off entirely. And,
well, she was given the hammer literally when she stepped in during the Spygate era. So maybe she had the power.
Oh, that's right.
The Mark James
power.
Oh,
my God, the way they talked about her in that thing. Oh. What a disaster. And it's just like, whoever advised Robert Kraft on that, like, everybody that watched the Dynasty docuseries lived it, knew it, loved the team. There's nobody that is in our listening audience that was not paying attention to the Patriots the last 20 years.
Where's the power?
Right, Mark. Where's the power?
And you watch that thing, and it's like, let me tell you how I did everything I could to hold on to it. And that's like, just take the 6 Super Bowls and go home. Like, what do you need to tell everybody about it?
978 Texter. Mayo being head coach was the best thing to happen to Vrabel. Do you think that's true? He gets a long
totally.
Leash now just because it was such a disaster?
I asked Greg and the crew at some point in the last week or two about what, because people perceive, those that are angry at Robert, and they're not many locally, about the one and done for Gerard Mayo. I asked, so would it have been better if he told Gerard, I know I told you I could give you this job, you're just not ready, you can interview elsewhere, I'm hiring Vrabel. Or what happened? And I think for Gerard Mayo, what happened was worse.
Yep.
But for the organization, what happened was better, and specifically for Vrabel, because he's not taken over, even taken over for a 4-13 Belichick team. Everybody that talked about Bill this past year was not talking about 4-13. They were talking about the 14-2 Belichick.
Well, what if Vrabel? What if Vrabel goes 4-13?
Then it goes to the crafts. It does, because if you have 3 straight 4-13 seasons with 3 different coaches, that's on you, pal. Like, that's not on the coach. That's on the roster and how you've been developing players.
Back over to Mahomes in the weekend conversation. 617 Texter. If Andy Reid wasn't in Kansas City, Mahomes isn't what he is. You can't say the same for Brady here. So back to the comparison.
It is true. He's an offensive genius with a great quarterback. I think in hearing Tom do the game that I was citing earlier where McDermott butchered the clock and called timeout and then lost it after they scored the touchdown against the Rams, that Tom you were hearing was not from Lloyd Carr. That was from a lifetime of playing for Bill Belichick. Like, the details, to say that Tom may have helped, like, you can't dispute the way in which Bill was able to manage a game and utilize his players. Andy Reid was someone that failed with the clock historically bad with the Eagles. And then he's got Mahomes. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
He's 66. He could coach, I guess, another 10 years. I mean, he might just stick it out with Mahomes.
I mean, he doesn't drink if he just stopped going to Golden Corral. I mean,
jeez.
The Chiefs...
Stop with those Celsius drinks.
I wouldn't want to mess with a Mahomes or a Reed kid about stealing anything. They seem like they take that personally. In watching the Chiefs and seeing where they are, what they've accomplished has been done many times, not 3 in a row.
Yep.
But the Steelers, the Niners, the Cowboys, and the first half of the Patriots and the Packers all did what they have done the last 6-7 years. What made the Patriots unique in all of sports was that it had a second run as good or better than the first, with a whole cast of characters that were different outside of the coach and the quarterback. So when Kelsey's done, whether it's this year or next, he'll have to win with a new top target. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're gonna have to recycle through this. What Mahomes has done is brilliant and it's great, and you could argue it's one of the best starts of any career in any sport. What made Brady's run so historic is that he matched it and added a Super Bowl on the second half.
Yep, with a lot of drama. Got to add in that. There was toward the end there. We had Wickersham stories out the wazoo for the last couple years of the deal.
The biggest story now is that Mahomes' wife likes Trump and Butker doesn't like women. Those are the big...
By the way, Chiefs-Lions, is that the goal? That was the...
I mean, I am all over Eminem over Taylor Swift. Eminem is the man. I am all in on the Lions over the Chiefs. I would love that. I would love to see Dan Campbell eat a kneecap at half at midfield of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Lions-Bills, though, that to me is the dream. That is the crossing of the Ragnarok streams, to use our Fitzy comparison there. So we'll see. Now, a couple things I want to get to. McDaniels and the OC search, which Vrabel told you was going to be a long one. But also the Celtics sale. I know Dakota was on and talking about a lot of interesting things yesterday. Celtics did bounce back and win last night. Are we underplaying the Celtics sale, which now seems closer? And February 6th is the deadline. This is a couple weeks away. Like, do you believe in Dakota's? They got to trade somebody to get under the luxury tax scoop, if we want to call it that.
He clarified yesterday on the Greg Hill show that, you know, he was theorizing about what would happen. The more I think of it, it isn't insane that if the Celtics want, or if Wick's family wants to get good value on this, that they'd have to do that. Because you look at, if, you know, $500 million down on a $5 billion purchase, $200 million in taxes, and then the roster for itself is probably $200 million. So you're looking at $1 billion in year one, cash. And then, if you're buying a plot of land, you're looking at $1 to $2 billion to build the new arena.
But if our buddy Rob Hale is going to buy the team, he doesn't want to trade one of those guys, right? He's got the cash. He's going to say, "Why would you trade Jaylen Brown? I want to buy this team to win a championship this year."
Because Rob Hale is massively philanthropic, and brilliant people like Rob Hale don't make bad decisions where they're wasting money. And it feels like that the Celtics are at a point where, as they are currently constituted, they have reached their apex. And I don't think the ratings and the issues with the viewership of the league and locally are unrelated to the perceived value of the organization as it relates to the NBA.
All right, I'd like some thoughts on that too coming up. So if you have any thoughts, the Celtics sale, is it going to force the C's hand to trade somebody big and get under that luxury tax? 617-779-7937. And we'll talk about the OC search and is Josh McDaniels inevitable? That's next. Kind of an interesting quote from Jaylen Brown after the game last night, Curtis, with Abby Chin on NBC Sports Boston. Walking off the court after the win, and a good win over Orlando on Friday night at the Garden. "I've had to adjust. It's a different year. I've just do what the team needs me to do. Not to read into it too much, but I guess that's what we do. Not to divide the Jays up, which we're always accused of doing, trying to divide a wedge between this team. But
they're
it is
best friends."
Yeah, well, I mean, he seems...
They finish each other's sentences.
Sandwiches. He seems a little frustrated about... when you say something like that, "I've had to adjust, it's a different year," it just sounds like there's something... He's uncomfortable a little bit.
There's always an element of joylessness when it pertains to this team, this era, and it's always blamed on the media or, you know, "let them be." Like, what great athlete has ever been let to be? Like, it's our job to talk about great politicians, great athletes, the people that are the best at what they do are the most nitpicked. It's the way we've always been for as long as there's been humans. Like, so this ownership and the potential sale by Wick and his family is startling to me, how little credence I gave to how much it may change the way the organization is operated. And I basically was like, why would Wick sell now when the team is finally sort of just, you know, set it and forget it? Like, they got the coach who's young and everybody loves, and they got one of the best players in the league. They got a top 15 guy, you know, with him and Jaylen Brown. They've got, you know, P. Pritch, as he's referred to on the morning show. And
yeah.
They got the chip and the ship. And
sixth
the,
man of the year, seventh man of the year, eighth man of
right.
the year.
I mean, I want to be ninth man of the year. That's really where the big ones sit. But either way, like, I watched this whole thing and I'm like, I can't believe I didn't think that this could derail the organization, and it may.
So now, this all because of our buddy Dakota, who's just a caller. He's just a private business guy. But he was on with you guys yesterday and saying, "This, my sources aren't with the team. They're just coming from business, right, that I'm hearing because bids are being put in. Maybe the team might be forced to trade a star player to get under the luxury tax bill. Because, you know, if they don't, this bill is going to be huge. You need a lot of cash on hand shortly. So, you know, if it is indeed, you know, Rob Hale or you know, people that own Amazon, it's maybe they have the money, but maybe they don't. Maybe they don't find that to be a smart business purchase. Or it,
but
it
it's
alters
not
the
about
price.
Having the money. There's a lot of people, like Ernie Buck has the money. It's do you view this as an investment that right. would be worth your while?
Right.
And if you see how massive these tax bills are, if you see the waning interest of the sport as a whole, if you see the fact that you need to find your own arena, like if I were giving, you know, just my honest take about what I think happened, estate planning is always good to say. Everybody could do it. It makes sense. You know, you want to set everything up. Families are always interesting and difficult, so you might as well get a head start, especially with the amount of money that Wickstad and he have. But maybe they've been trying to find a place for years to build their own arena. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't figure it out financially. So now they have to sell it. Because if you were going to plan to sell the team at some point, having your own arena would have been the real place to make a huge amount of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sitting here kind of flat-footed.
When you hear Wick talk, why do you think they are selling? Like what?
I think that it's the profitability is going to wane. That's why any rich person sells something.
So he hasn't lost the passion for it. He still wishes he could keep it, but it's just becoming unwieldy.
Right. And why, you know, what a better time than after a championship so people don't perceive you to be as money hungry that, you know, they're asking, wondering why you are selling. They want you to keep the team. And
there was a reported, like, rift between he and his dad, which I think he has debated or denied, but, you know, who knows?
But right, but we'll never actually know that. So I'd rather, like, as I have no idea. I would never.
How are you and John Curtis getting along?
Swimmingly. Actually, he's currently swimming with James, so perfect.
All right.
You know, but these conversations, if my dad had an investment in something that was highly profitable, he wouldn't look for me to sell it before he dies. He'd want it to be retained and keep profiting for as long as we could make money off of it.
Right, but if he knew you would get you in trouble.
Right.
He might
say, that's why you got me into radio.
Well, hey, stock is up. Morning show's cruising.
Hey, listen, you know, we're doing well. I would just say that let's stop taking things at face value when it comes to why and when people sell things. And the reason they haven't gotten the amount of money they were seeking is because the same reason they're selling it, which is that it's not as profitable as they once thought it would be.
Okay, now, so I agree with all that. So let's say they do trade Jaylen Brown. Is it popular, unpopular, mixed? Is it, well, what do they get back? I'm sure they get back draft picks, right? It's a retooling, almost like the Bruins. I mean, you had Cam Neely throw out that word this week. There is a chance in the span of a couple months, Brad Marchand is traded and Jaylen Brown is traded, right?
Yes. And I would say Keefe would be a big winner. And I would also add that there would be a national conversation about Boston trading Jaylen Brown. So get ready for that one.
Yep.
But there would be rage. Absolutely.
I don't know about full-fledged rage with that one. It would be some people, because back when it will go back to the same debates we had, and some people pre-title felt they could get by with trading Jaylen and adding other pieces around Tatum and making him the guy. You know, I mean, maybe they could win without him. Maybe they could. Maybe they trade Porzingis and another piece to get under the tax.
Right, but I obviously it'll be dependent on how they play. But if I am Wick, I don't do these separately. In other words, I find the suitor that's going to buy with the sale is predicated upon
yep.
the trade of this player by this date. So you're not separately announcing it. So in other words,
well, you have 2.5 weeks until the trade deadline. So that accelerates things.
Right. So, I mean, but that's why Dakota theorized on this, and we're not going yeah. with a report. It was just a theory as to why
right.
nobody's reporting anything other than they okay. haven't sold the team. People are miffed as to why they haven't gotten the money they were seeking. And one way that they could get the money they seek is if they offload some of this money and are not against the tax with $200 million for nothing.
Yep. What do you think? Do you sense big changes coming with the Celtics, with the sale coming up, or do you fear it? 617-779-7937. Kenny Curtis. 1 hour left for us. We'll be joined by Scheim and Mego at noon. They're on noon to 3 today. Then Boomer and Valenti. Then the NFL games right here on EEI. Up next, McDaniels. Is he going to be the OC? We'll talk about it.